Hi, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, July 19th, 2002, and Emily Kirsten Gripp is presenting Caring as We Grow. Now let's go to the Creekside Room for Emily's presentation.
So we're going to begin talking to about the industry people. And if people come in, we'll just include them as we go. My name is Emily Kirsten Gripp, and I am here today talking about parenting. And the title, I can't remember the exact title, and I'm supposed to say it for this, but it was about parenting with compassion. And that's what we're going to be focusing on today. I'm actually here teaching some more next week, and I'll be talking more about other pieces next week.
I'm on a lot of place here.
Oh, did you mean to be...
No, my parenting is long ago.
Well, I bet you'll have some real insight for the rest of
it. Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's often the case. And part of that, I want to let everybody know that I'm not an expert. I'm not someone who's studied and has become a total expert on parenting. I'm somebody who's taught parenting around several different curriculums over the years. I've worked with lots of families in lots of different situations. So I have some experience, but what I have learned, and I think those of you who have been going to JUST classes, is that, you know, basically every family has its own culture, and every family has its own traditions and pieces that need to fit in. And so there isn't one way of parenting that's the way. There's nobody who can hand you a package and you can walk away with this perfect solution for anything that might come up in your family. As a result, when I do parenting stuff, I usually just pull from a bunch of different spots. I don't do one set curriculum. I sort of work on what people are interested in. I did want to say that the work I do, I have two jobs, really. I work as a consultant and trainer for Portland State University in their extended studies program, and I train Head Start social workers both off of the curriculum, but then also I do individualized training around what different programs need or want. And then I'm a mom who gets to stay home the majority of the time, which has been a real gift for myself and for my family. So I have to tell a story on myself just because for years I taught parenting before I was a parent. And one of my very best friends was the teacher up here for many years. Desley English, she was the elementary school teacher, and I decided she's maybe the best mom in the world, or the best one I'll ever know. She's an incredible parent. And I was talking to her on the phone, soon after my children are both adopted, and we adopted Tori when she was almost three. And soon after that, I was at the grocery store one day, and the cart she wanted wasn't there, and she fell on the floor and had a total fit in the middle of the grocery store in front of the carts so no one else could get in and get their carts. And I ended up picking her up and took her outside and put her on the curb in front of me just so between my legs so that she wouldn't go anywhere. And she was just screaming. And firefighters from across the street came across to see what was going on. She was that loud. But all these several firefighters walked over and said, you know, is it okay here? You doing all right? And I called Desley and was telling her that night. She said, you know, I never wanted to say this out loud, but I'm not sure you ought to be able to teach parenting until you've had a moment like that. So I said, well, you know, you're right. It's pretty humbling. I used to always say, oh, I'm sure, you know, that I've never had the experience, but I'm sure I know how it feels. But so you're sitting in the parking lot with a screaming child, or sitting in the dining hall, or any of those places here in Holden. So anyway, yeah, that's the other piece, is just to say, after I said I do this, I thought, what am I saying? I'm saying you can all watch me parent and teach the class. I'm bound to do things wrong, and people will say, what do you know? So in some ways, we're all the experts here, and I'm hoping that everybody can offer some insight and information to each other, and we're going to talk in smaller groups and in larger groups so that everybody gets a chance to be heard a little bit. So if you read what was written out on the kiosk, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to cover it all today, of course, because we can't talk about empathy, compassion, and community all in one day. What I'm going to talk about today is more the compassion piece. and being a compassionate parent as we model for our children that compassion in their own lives. And some of the ways we can do that, and we're already doing it. One of the things that was said last night, there was a forum on working with children and how to do intergenerational stuff around global issues. And Joe Arnett, who's the biologist or the botanist here this week, was talking about something he's done with his daughter. But he brought in from the sermon last night that idea that what we want to do is give our children human hearts. We don't want our children to grow up with hearts of stone. But that's what we want for our children at a very deep level, is that human heart. And so in giving them that gift of compassion, giving them that chance to let that human heart be safe and able to grow and to be there as they continue on, is our goal. But where I want to start today is getting us thinking about when it's hardest to be compassionate and to share our compassion with our children. And where that happens, I think, for a lot of us, is when we're mad. And when we're really mad, not just when we're irritated. Although, sometimes for me, that's the worst. I'm almost better when I'm really mad as that little irritant that can do it. But what I want you to do is take a minute, and I'm going to make you get out of your... I don't know how to draw this particularly, but... We're going to pretend that's a pot, okay? What I'd like people to do is get up and move around, although you're
involved
with that responsibility, although you can have somebody else do it for you. Okay. What I'd like you to do is think for a minute about the stuff that really makes you angry. It just, brings up your heart rate, you're just in that, so your stomach gets tight. It doesn't have to be in parenting, although that's what we're talking about today, so you might want to think about it. And in my experience, it's probably, I don't think I've ever been as mad as I've been since I became a mom. I don't think anybody's ever made me that angry or been part of that anger dance with me. But so what I'd like you to do is just think for a minute, what are some of those things that if you'd be willing to come up and stick it in the pot, what are some of the things, or I can write them up there, but I think if we get people moving, it'll help us. Ooh, we've got some volunteers right away. Good. And go ahead and tell people what it is as you've written it. Or...
Taking too much time. 30 minutes to exit the house is totally unreasonable.
We're going to need a bigger pot.
That's fine.
I run into a lot of closed-minded individuals, and I hope he doesn't become closed-minded.
Mm. And that's the one that makes you mad. So we just, and it's people who won't listen, or people who...
Yeah, they get stubborn and they say, this is the way it is. It's hard to talk with those people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any?
One kid viciously insulting another. Verbal put-downs that are extreme.
Okay.
And when the kids know each other well, they know how to go for the jugular.
Amen.
Okay, nobody else that gets to sit unless they can tell me.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got one.
Yeah, I was trying to think. I heard that.
Of course.
Irritable, but I'm trying to think.
Years of experience.
Ah.
See, I almost get irritable when I'm stressed. I would say basically good child, but I get irritable at him when I'm stressed about things in my own life. So,
yeah, we're going to talk about that. Yeah. Rebellion?
Teen.
Rebellious teen.
Oh, rebellious teen.
Hey, Al. I don't know how to say this.
Okay.
invasion of my space.
Did she really? Oh, okay.
She didn't have her name, so she had to go. And I have an incident on that, too.
Okay, good. Good.
Keep it in mind.
What does it say, Joanne?
Oh, invasion of my space with unnecessary noise.
Talking about your children or your grandchildren?
Anybody.
Oh.
In this particular case, I'm thinking of a next door neighbor with a motorcycle. Who hasn't talked to me for 25 years.
I put a snotty back.
From adults or from kids?
I'm thinking about too about Nick.
That wasn't some personal.
No.
From parishioners who like
that's just a right. I don't get too much of that. The hard part, if I can just say, is that I'm aware that I don't want to shut down. Like it usually has to do with something we want him to do and he doesn't want to do. I don't want to shut down his ability to register not liking something or even being angry about something, but I really don't like it when it's got an overtone of being snotty and put down in reverse, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to figure that out sometimes, is what do you let happen as an honest reaction, and what do you say, hey, you can't talk to me like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's you can't talk to me like that.
Yeah.
That feeling. What's this?
This says, minimum details or secrecy. Even so much, I'm not being willing to.
So when other people aren't sharing.
Well, it may be as an older parent with older children.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that comes this whole business of the telephone, you know, they picking up and not picking, not just being really open with the verbal communication because they're afraid they're saying too much or don't want to say enough. I just don't like secrecy among the families.
Okay. So open.
Yeah.
Desiring that openness.
Yeah. Mine is basically the stress thing and big time, like packing, trying to get the kids to, the youngest one to sleep by 10 so I can finish all the packing. And she's so excited she can't sleep and I can't pack. So I end up, once she gets to sleep at midnight, staying up till 5 or 6 till we leave to get everything done. And I get very stressed and angry and say things I shouldn't. Go to sleep or you're not coming. So then she wants to go to sleep because she thinks she's not coming.
Why did you leave me behind, Mom?
Yeah.
Oh no.
Another one of
them. Get a bigger pot. You have to get a bigger pot.
That's okay. The Klingon scenario where they want to be picked up and they always want to just be with you and they're being unreasonable and I'm tired and I just want to cook dinner and get them in bed, but I can't because they have to be held. Probably not the most compassionate mom in the world.
Well, but that is. I mean, we have things we need to do in our life.
And
you know, that we need to get done. We need to cook meals or whatever. And there is. There's that, how do I get that boundary?
Just want 10 minutes to get a job done.
Wait, where'd you put yours?
Oh, in between. Oh. I just wrote total self-focus, which was okay when the kids were 2, but at 12 and 15, it's a little grindy.
Okay. Yeah, then egocentrism.
Yeah.
What is it?
They're totally self.
Oh, self-centered.
Yeah, self-focused or still that ego piece. Any others? Any other boiling issues? Mine is defiance. When it's just like,
yeah, that would work too.
Yeah. And then suddenly my blood pressure, I must just go boom. But I know. But that one's. Well, and I think what I'm hearing, and I heard from 2 of you being really insightful about, is for most of us, it's not any one thing that puts us over the top.
It's when three or four have happened in a row, when I'm physically tired, I'm hungry, and then, you know, you've been defiant twice, I have things I need to get done, I've got to make dinner, and now you want to be picked up. And I had it. You know, this is just it. I'm done. And I think we've all been there. I don't know many people who haven't been there, or who as a child haven't had that happen. When suddenly you think, well, that wasn't such a big deal, and she's furious with me. You know, I didn't, you know, or had your child give me that look like, you know, I didn't think you'd be that bad. And we've all been there. And I think that it's important to keep in mind, because sometimes we get really focused on that one thing. If she would just not be defiant, or if, you know, we can pick out that one piece or something as if that's the thing that's the problem. And it's usually that we're up hot, that all these things are coming into all day. And sort of thinking about it as, you know, you can have a few bad things come in and then you get a couple of nice interactions and gosh, you know, those kind of fall back out of the pot. But some days it piles up and we boil over. Let's see. And so since that's our hardest time to be compassionate, I want to do two things with it. First, I want you to get into groups, and not with your partner, your parenting partner, if they're here, but to get into groups and talk about what are some of the techniques you have for not boiling over. Okay, what are some of the things you do to take care of yourself or to sort of stop that process? I want you to be able to get a chance to tell each other some of the things you've done over the years or in the past, okay? So if you can do that just for a couple of minutes, because I want to come back, talk about those, and we'll do something more with it then. Great. If I could get everybody's attention again, you can stay where you are or move back, whatever is most convenient for you.
Thanks, guys, for coming.
So I'm curious what came out of that. What are some of the things you do when you feel like this is coming? And sometimes it comes. You know, I think we're all acknowledging that there are times we all boil over. But when it doesn't happen, when you're able to take a few of those pieces out or whatever so that you can bring it back down, what works? Yeah.
A long time.
Okay.
It's when I rebalance.
So what we're looking, I like that term, to rebalance. Because we could have done that like a scale, too. Couldn't we just,
right,
you know, putting weights on one side and all of a sudden we're
pushed over the edge.
Yeah. Exactly.
And something trivial can be what pushes it over.
Exactly.
Otherwise it wouldn't rattle you.
Right.
What else? What did people think of?
For me, with the Klingon scenario, I do two things. I've learned to give myself like a 20 or 30 minute buffer, knowing that worst case scenario, I've given myself permission to have it take that long. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I do is I'll get down on the floor with the Klingon scenario and play with them for 15 or 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then they're happy, mm-hmm, and they have had their mommy time, and then I can get dinner again.
So you break up, you stop your agenda.
Yeah, exactly. Or I enlarge my, put more time in my agenda.
Okay, what else came up? Everybody was talking on that.
I was going to say, mine's from a slightly different perspective. I teach high school, so I've got the big kids, and I also get to go home and they're not with me. But when there's an issue that's going on, a lot of times what I do is I put myself back to when I was in high school and think about what's going on underneath, mm-hmm, that it allows me really and truly to react with more compassion than I would if I just see someone acting out in class, mm-hmm, then, you know, to think about why are they doing this? What's really driving it?
So some empathy.
Yeah.
Behind it. What else?
One thing that's really helped me is something I learned in the education class, and that was the classroom management kind of thing. That it's not my job to control them, which I sort of knew that, but to a different role definition that works with my students and also with my own kids. I'm more like a coach or a consultant. And so at any given time, I may or may not react. I have a range of a repertoire of different reactions that I can use, different skills and approaches. And that, but I'm the one who controls it. I don't have to hop when a kid says a bad word.
So your way of not boiling over is
to detach a little.
To detach.
To detach and redefine as a parent. I mean, I do not plan on controlling my children's behavior hardly at all anymore. I mean, control is when they're thinking, but I'm much more like a professional consultant.
Yeah.
Going along with that would be keeping long-term goals in your mind as to what you want for this child's value system to be. In the sense that, okay, you've got this immediate thing happening that can throw you over the edge or whatever. The kids say, but Mom, everybody's doing it, and we've all gone through that one. And you say, well, we don't do it here. Or being that parent, you say you can, like we were talking about here, and we were both saying that we give our kids permission to put all the blame on Mom or Dad. I can't do it because my parents are using it, whatever. That's fine. We can handle that. If the long-range goal is that we, you know, want to have them.
How did you do that in the moment?
In the moment?
When you were
By being very firm.
Being very
firm. I don't know how else to say it.
Real structure.
When the child is saying, but mom, this is the reason why, and da da da, and he's like, it's not going to work, you know. Just be firm. You know, they keep begging, well, it's not going to work.
Okay, so being consistent.
Being consistent, yeah.
The other thing is you can set a date with them. We both need to talk about this when we're both more settled down. Mm-hmm. I'm getting irritated with your behavior, and I know you're really ticked off at me right now. We both need, when we simmer down, we'll talk about this. Okay. And at that point, I mean, I'll sometimes, you know, change where the line is. Mm-hmm. I'll back down sometimes, but not in response to being pressured by the kid. Mm-hmm. Well, not usually.
Yeah, because sometimes things can be negotiated.
Yeah.
And there
sometimes it's got a good point.
Yeah. And so then you have to humble yourself as a parent and say, well, maybe I was wrong with that. Mm-hmm. You know, you've given me something else. I'm thinking of teenage years here. Mm-hmm. That you've given me something else to think about, another point of view, and maybe I am being unreasonable. And then being, as I say, the humble enough to admit. And so the kid doesn't get the idea that, well, parent thinks he's always right, because you were not.
Okay, what else?
Being empathetic. Sometimes you just have to tell them that you're the boss.
Okay. So for you it works to just, when you're feeling frustrated and upset, or when you were in the past, because I'm sure your children are never frustrating anymore.
No, they're very loving to me.
I'm sure they are. But your response that helped was just to say...
The incident that happened was that my youngest wanted to stop going to Sunday school and church, and to a preacher, that's the worst thing that can happen. You haven't reached it yet.
I know, Barbara just
said our day will come.
When I heard that, I was really angry, and I was a redhead then. So I picked up the rocker that was there. It was about that size, and it had rockers on it. I picked it up, and I made an emphasis. I broke the rocker. Ooh. I still have that rocker, and the crack still shows. Mm-hmm. And Routine remembers it to this day.
I bet.
You have to be emphatic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so sometimes that firmness, you know, needs to be just emphatic firmness. There just is no negotiating this one.
Of course, she doesn't go to church today, but she has a good reason. She had her lung removed and lost a lot of her immunity ability. Mm. Since she got around crowds, when she got that lung out, she started back teaching, and within a week she was down with the flu and cold and didn't have the immune system running, so she had to quit. She been on Social Security.
Something else, it kind of comes back to the alone time one, that I noticed for myself that things will be more likely to set me off when I'm overcommitted. Mm-hmm. And so something to do, and I've noticed this also with friends who are parents, is that when you just, there's just too much on your plate, mm-hmm. it sends you off. And so I have to sometimes take that step back and look at what can I cut back from my life that...
That's excellent.
That is so true.
And it's so hard for some of us. One for me that hasn't come up yet is exercise.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if I can, especially, I mean, in the moment, it's great if I can do it, you know. And one of the things I started doing with my kids, just because it helps me and I realized it helps them too, is sometimes we go run laps around the house. And we even do it in the rain, because you have to, if you live where we live. But it's helpful. It's just so, because then it gets funny, you know, like here we are.
In the middle of a conflict situation.
Right.
So,
you know, instead of, you know, we've got to go laugh and laugh. Yep, take
That's
a lap or whatever.
Great.
Or if there's defiance happening or whatever, it's just like, you know, time to run some laps, you know, and it gets funny, you know, it's like, geez, I wonder what, you know, Grandma Florence thinks we're doing out here. But for the kids, that it's a really helpful thing, because often if we're here and responding to them from here, they're emotionally gonna meet us way up here. And so suddenly we've got this huge thing happening that we had no intention for. And we need to be able to model for our kids some other ideas. So this isn't all, certainly. Were there any other things that haven't been touched on?
Well, mine's a little different. Maybe it's because my children are older or what, I don't mm-hmm. remember, but I find myself, when I'm the oddball that's out, and I'm the one that's angry off, and I think about myself, and I usually back down, and they're in the right position, and mm-hmm. I would make my head turn and take their position.
So you
that's
take
when they're
some
a little
time
bit older.
To think,
I mean, they're a toddler, but pardon?
So you take some time to think and evaluate.
I know, but I've always been wrong, it seems like, and find that my position. I mean, I change.
Mm-hmm.
I change often.
I was going to say, though, there's nothing...
And
I mean,
they do their own thing, I guess, is what
changes.
I want to say.
Yeah, making a change is never, if it's in the right direction, is never wrong. That means you just listen and learn. And we all need to do more of that, probably.
I think one of the things that really tense at our house, I cracked the kids up, because all three of us, we had just had it. I was trying to pack for Holden. I had animal problems out of the barn, and I just said, Kevin, you're in a timeout, Emily, you're in a timeout, and Mama's in a timeout. And I put everybody in their room, including me, and shut the door and set the timer for 10 minutes.
Great.
And Emily and Kevin just looked, they were like amazed that, you know, Mommy would
Mommy
put her
to herself in time.
Were you looking at each other? You were in the same room?
Oh, no, we... Yeah. I'm talking
Timeouts are something that can be used really effectively. They can be used ineffectively too, but if it's done right, it's really nice. My 4-year-old takes timeouts. One day he was having a really tough time, and it was, you know, I have friends who call it the witching hour, dinner time. Everybody's hungry, everybody needs to do things. It's a tough time of day for everybody. But he was having a tough time, and I said, you need to take a break. And, you know, I was frustrated, and, you know, do you need to take a break? And he said, no. And I said, okay, but, you know, I need to do this now. And a few minutes later, I realized he was sitting in the living room, and I went in and I said, you know, you're not in timeout. And he said, yes, I am. He said, I put myself here. And for him, I never timed the timeouts. So when you feel like you can come back, come on back. But right now, this isn't safe, or it's not, you're not having fun, nobody's having fun, whatever. But when you're ready to come back. But they should be just that, just what we all need. As adults, what we need, that alone time, that minute to rethink and step back emotionally. All of those things are what timeouts are about and what they're for. And so however we have to give those to ourselves, so if it's while we're running around the house, if it's while we're going into our separate rooms, so we're not in each other's spaces anymore.
Yeah.
whatever, using the empathy. Because a lot of times, how many of you have had parenting classes before? I was going to ask that early on. So a few folk, yeah, and all of us probably have read a parenting book or some ideas about parenting or whatever over time. Because there are a lot of things we can do when we're frustrated or having a tough time. I want to change this list now into something else. And these are, I'm being very practical today. The other thing, and I forgot to do this at the beginning, and I was supposed to, so I'm going to do it now so I don't forget. I could have done it at the end, but I'm going to do it right now. This is the book I'm going to be using more next week. This is called Growing Up Again. Are any of you familiar with that and the idea behind it? This is a wonderful book, and it's very accessible. The idea behind this book is taking those stages that kids grow through, Erickson's 8 stages, if you have a psych course. She takes those stages, goes through them, talks about what are the needs of our children during those stages, how do we meet those needs, how do we talk to our children, how do we address things. But it also talks about how, as our children grow through stages, or as we have, you never finish one. It's not sort of like, oh, I've gotten over my need to learn to trust because I'm not an infant anymore and my mom took good care of me. Our ability to trust people can be shattered by things that happen in our lives, or even just undermined slowly but surely over time. And so when our children hit those stages, often it becomes a big issue for us. I hired somebody to talk once, I think it was a great example of her daughter was being bullied at school. And they'd addressed it and talked about it a lot. And her daughter felt like they'd really kind of worked it out. And so it wasn't an issue anymore. But about a few weeks later, she was at the school and her daughter said, oh, see that girl over there? That's the girl. And she was a lot bigger than her daughter. She was physically a lot bigger and just looked tough. And she said she was immediately back as a junior high school kid who'd been picked on, and she walked over and just told that girl. And her poor daughter was just, Mom, you're done. She said, you know, but I was right back there emotionally. I was right back there. It's like that big person is picking on her, and I can't allow it. You know, I'm going to defend the kid I was that never got defended by somebody bigger. So they come up for us again and again. So to keep track of those is really important. What I want to add to this now is I want you to just internally for a minute think about somebody you know you really like to be around. Okay, just think in your head for a minute. Somebody you really like to be around. And why you like to be around them. What are some of the qualities or things that they do or like?
They're willing to listen.
Good listeners. Okay.
They have the same values.
I have to, I'm a terrible speller, so if I spell anything wrong, I apologize.
Can laugh together, have fun together.
What else?
Not judgmental.
Is it an E or not?
M-E-N-T.
I always have trouble with that one, too.
E.
There, I don't think
no,
there's an E.
E is British spelling.
Yeah, right.
E. Thank you.
So either way, you're okay. Just talk with an accent if you put an E in there.
There you go. I
fit right.
Okay. What else? What else are some of the qualities of people you like to be with?
Somebody who's continuing to learn and grow. Okay, that's a stimulating, exciting, interesting thing.
Okay.
Curious, growing, learning. For me.
Somebody that you can share your dreams with.
Hmm.
just available.
Okay. Yeah, open to relationship.
Someone who's willing to look beneath the surface.
Okay. For deeper meaning or?
Yeah, for deeper anything.
Okay.
Oh, I have another one.
Okay.
Someone who's very honest.
Honest and
what is that
caring also? Or caring and honest? I mean,
well, you know, caring is a luxury, but I really value caring is fine and I love it, but you know, I really value honesty even when it's not caring, if it's true.
Mm-hmm. You want to, you really look for that in people.
Right, and I want to also feel like I can be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think easygoing, someone who's not tense all the time.
Mm-hmm. And we had caring too, because as you all probably recognize, we all have different things we look for.
And able to smile.
Ah.
Well, sense of humor is good, yeah.
Forgiving.
Mm.
Yeah, don't want to be friends for very long.
Right.
One of those necessities. Sense of humor, I heard, right?
Yeah.
I think with people the same age, it's when we go on vacation with friends, it's same parenting style is really important to Jeff and I.
It is.
Because it just makes being with them so much easier.
Yeah.
Yes.
Someone who's not afraid of conflict?
Those are a lot of requirements for somebody to be met.
It's just a wish list.
And actually, what I'm trying to get to here is this wouldn't be all in one person. It's just to get everybody thinking about when I think about people I like to be with, when I think about what I feel comfortable in or a relationship that's good for me, what are some of the things? And they aren't all the same. Some of us might find that sense of humor to be the door in, and if it's not there, we don't know how to build that relationship very well. So it's different, they get different ways, and some might not even be there for us, but these are just qualities as we talk about things that we look for in people. What are some of the things we do? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and the negative of all of those are the people you don't like to be around.
Mm-hmm. The opposite.
That we could find in ourselves to try to change. Good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what I want to do now is have you, and I'm going to, there's never enough time. What I wanted you to do is, I was going to do it as a large group, but I think I want to be sure everybody gets a chance to talk. So maybe I'll have you just real quickly form back into small groups. I want you to think about a time when what was happening, when you felt badly about how things were going in your parenting. An incident or an event. Okay? Think about that. Or as a teacher, or as a child. Thinking back, what was it like when this happened? But think about it, and then what you need to do is put the concrete piece on it of what was happening. What was it? Was it yelling? Was it hitting? Was it pushing? And who was doing it? Was it the child? Was it you? Who was involved in this interaction? So that's kind of three big pieces that I want you to think about together just for a minute. But so what you need to think of is an event, what was happening, the concretes of it. And then who was involved in it, or who was doing the action that was really hard. Okay, so real quickly, do that in your small groups. In whatever small group you'd like. If it's easy to do the same one again, go ahead. Karen was just saying something that I thought is pretty seminal, and that's what I was going to go back to. So could you just, what you were just saying about being a good parent? She has a really good point about this.
It's really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's, for me, a really key role in who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have a kid who's blown apart and going ballistic, whatever phrase you want, you know the kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Too often I take on for myself the message. I have no clue what to do here. I'm utterly clueless. A good parent would know what to do, therefore I must be a bad parent. And that's when I really, that ups the stakes tremendously. A successful outcome in the short term means I'm competent. And if we don't cope well in the next 20 minutes, that means I really am not a good parent.
Mm-hmm. We make our own pot, sort of this good parent pot that we do to ourselves.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the good parent. We should be able to take anything that happens into the pot on any given day at any moment and take
care
of it and deal with it and do it right and know what to do, not stand there. I mean, how many of you have ever had your child do something and you just stand there and look at them? Because I don't know what to
say.
That's
less violent than a lot of other alternative things you could be doing.
Right, right. But it is. And it's, I think, you know, probably the biggest permission we need to give ourselves is that we're not always going to know what to do. Sometimes we're going to do things and think that, you know, man, I never wanted to do that. How many of you have had your mother spill out of your mouth?
Oh, oh yeah.
You know,
it's
like, oh, man, yeah. You know, can I have those back? I didn't want those to be in this house. But they do,
yeah.
And it happens all the time. But when you look at the qualities we look for in people we like to be with and like to be around, we want them to be able to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
We want our children to be able to forgive us, and they're not going to learn it unless we model it for them. I'm not getting through everything I wanted to, so I'm going to try and wrap it together real quickly. What we're trying to do for our children and for ourselves is to take those really tough moments and reframe them for ourselves and for our children in ways that let us say, you know, choosing the pieces out of here that are most important to us. What are the qualities we really like in other people? What are those pieces, and when I respond, how am I either modeling one of these things or supporting one of these things for my children? You know, is it that we want our child to be able to share their dreams with me? Well, then maybe, even when they're irritating me because I'm trying to make dinner, but they're trying to tell me about something they thought of today, I need to stop and change my agenda. Because they need to know that their dreams are worthy of being heard and supported. Or if we want them to be non-judgmental, we really need to know how we sound when we talk about people who are different than we are, or people who have different values or whatever. If we don't want them to be judgmental, we need to model it. But we are who our children become. I think we all have moments when we suddenly realize our child has done something just like us. Mm-hmm. And that's such a wonderful feeling. Until you see them do something you didn't like particularly, and you thought, that looked just like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so to remember that we are the primary teachers of our children, even after our children have grown up and moved on. What your children learn, you know, I hear you saying stuff that sounds like you're not always feeling good about the fact that you make changes based on learning other things, that sometimes you think, well, I was wrong. What you're teaching your children is to be curious and willing to make change when it's necessary. And that's an incredible gift. That growing, that we continue to grow, that we continue to do all of these things. So what I was going to do next was have you choose those pieces and come up with concrete ways that you can start passing those on. As a family, as an individual, as a person who wants to make changes. I think all of us fall into those traps of moments, our worst moments, when we aren't doing those things. But if we can make sort of a family plan around what are our goals and values. One of the things our family's done that was really helpful is we wrote a family mission statement. And just sat down and everybody worked on it, and it can be revised at any time. But a chance to sit down and say, this is what our family wants to stand for. So that when people say, what are the Kirsten Grips like, we can say, you know, they like their, what did we come up with? We came up with the honesty pieces and compassionate and sharing and giving and all sorts of wonderful things that we aren't all the time, but that we want to have there for all of us to be thinking about. And I was thinking maybe I'd even make it a sign for our wall. But, you know, to remember that we need, if we want our kids not to be too hard on themselves, they need to see us forgive ourselves for when we're wrong. They need to see us say, you're right. You know, I spoke too soon on that. I can change my mind. We want our kids to be flexible. Then they need to see that flexibility is an okay thing, that it's not always this way or no way. That sometimes, you know, I'm wrong. Gosh, I hadn't thought of it that way. Wow. It respects so many pieces of our children. So, I wish I had more time. Always do. But those are some suggestions of things you can go away from here with, as ideas you can do with your family. Do any of you have things like that? Yeah.
Well, I just have to share something with this group. Last night at Vespers, we had a baby bird that had fallen out of a tree. And my daughter she's four, and she's learned independence at Holden, and so she's with this whole group of kids, and they all have this baby bird. And Vespers was just about ready to start, and I was like, well, get the bird out of here. We're not supposed to play with the bird. And this other mom, she says, somebody from Narnia came over, and we've talked about peace with the bird. So all the kids were taking turns holding this thing through Vespers. And what really struck me is here we're teaching, you know, this big global issue of the Jews and the Palestinians and hearts of stone, but yet we have eight little kids that are so distraught. Tears are flowing down their eyes as they're thinking about this little bird dying. And it was just so touching. This other gal and I, we just cried all the way through because we're hearing this big global issue, but yet these little kids, the whole world is revolving around this bird.
Mm-hmm. And they're learning something about compassion and caring and watching. You're right, Holden has lots of opportunities for things like this, but we need to take it home too. We need to say, how do we think about these things at home and think about them with our kids and our families so our children can be all we want them to be. And we have that freedom to be who they need to be as they grow. So we need to stop.